We're in Acts chapter 24. Trial of Felix. He's been transferred by Claudius Lysias to Caesarea under the guise of night in order to protect himself politically, but in order also to protect Paul from being overwhelmed by the 40 men or so that have taken a vow not to eat and even calling curses down on themselves salvifically until they kill Paul. They will not let the oath go away, calling down anathema on themselves, that is, the anathema is the English word. Okay, what I wrote up here the other day, that was English. That was not Greek. And that's, I'm not making fun of anybody. I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. That's an English word, okay? And it means to, you know, to curse, to be cursed, or to curse someone. And that comes from the Greek word anathematizo, which is the word that they used in order to describe their vow. They're calling down curses on themselves. So Claudius Lysias transfers Paul to Felix in Caesarea. And we're right now in the middle of the trial between Paul and the Jewish elite. And Tertullus, God love him, the lawyer for the Jews, has given his defense. And he starts off by lathering up Felix, like, oh, you're so wonderful, even though Felix wasn't. He was a tyrant who had risen from being a slave into his position of prominence. Nevertheless, which I think will play into some of his psyche here in just a minute. But Tertullus ends up describing how awesome he is. And then he gives four accusations about Paul. What were those four accusations? Number one, he's a troublemaker. He's a plague, a disease. Number two, he's a rioter. He's stirring up riots, causing the Pax Romana to be threatened. Number three, has a new religion. He is the founder of a new religion that belongs to the Nazarene sect. And number four, desecrating the temple. He is even causing problems or trying to denigrate the legal religion of Judaism. So those four are the accusations Tertullus gives. Paul comes back and just says, that's ridiculous on multiple levels. He just says, you can't, the people even here that initially accused me aren't even here. Why? Because they didn't have a leg to stand on. They know it, and you'll find, as soon as I explain to you what happened, you'll know it. He says, matter of fact, while I was in the temple, I was in there giving money to the poor. So if that's why you're going to arrest me and, you know, beat me and kill me for being benevolent, go ahead. But I was giving money to the poor. I wasn't causing a riot. Who caused the riot? He said, you know what? Let's talk about what I was really on trial for. Maybe the people of the Sanhedrin can give a synopsis of my trial before them. Would they like to? No. Because the real issue is the resurrection. It always has been the real issue. I believe Jesus resurrected from the dead, and they don't like that. And that's where we find ourselves in verse 22. Then Felix, who was well acquainted with the way. Whoa. How would Felix be well acquainted with the way? That's actually pretty odd in the Roman world for one of the Roman rulers to be well acquainted with Christianity, because they saw them as just a lot of times they did think it was just a Jewish sect, just an offshoot of Judaism that was causing problems. They didn't understand the distinguishing marks between them. But how would this guy be well acquainted with the way? Caesarea, why is that significant? Yeah, why is that significant? There is a church in Caesarea that's even led by Philip, but let's stay on the Cornelius line. You're right. Why is Cornelius' conversion important of a possible explanation of why Felix may have been well acquainted with the way? Josh? Yeah, because Cornelius was a centurion, a high-ranking soldier in the Roman army that was based in Caesarea. And whenever he converts, and possibly a lot of his men convert, all of a sudden you have this conversion of this group of people called the Way inside of the people that are supposed to be perpetuating your empire. It's even possible that because of Cornelius' new conversion, he may not have even felt like he could still be a part of the Roman centurions. So he might have even left the Roman centurions the same way that Saul left his life of violence against the way. So whenever things like that begin to occur, Felix and Roman rulers are going to start paying attention. Not to mention the fact, here's the second way Felix was acquainted with the way. His wife is named Drusilla, which we'll meet her in just a moment. And she was a Jewess. She was a Jew. And her father was Herod Agrippa, who killed James the Apostle in Acts chapter 12. And it was known, even by Josephus, that possibly the actions against the way was the impetus with which God killed Herod Agrippa because of his arrogance, claiming to be a god, as well as his persecution against the way. He was also the guy that imprisoned Peter, but was miraculously rescued by the angel in Acts chapter 12. That's her dad. So his acquaintance with the way probably was a combination of the things with Cornelius as well as with his own wife. Verse 22, then Felix, who was well acquainted with the way, adjourned the proceedings. Claudius Lysias. When Lysias, the commander, comes, he said, I will decide your case. He ordered the centurion to keep Paul under guard, but to give him some freedom and permit his friends to take care of his needs. That's kind of strange, is it not? What is he doing? In essence, what has he just done here? Because they've just been in a court proceeding. And with what's happened now, what is it in essence is Felix announcing? Say it again. Yeah, that there isn't really enough to punish him in the way in which the Jews are describing. They're in essence, not in totality, in essence, Felix has ruled in favor of Paul. But Felix has other plans for Paul, because whenever you are navigating politically through a certain event, sometimes the right thing to do is not always the thing that you need to do. Did you hear me in that? Whenever you're navigating politically, sometimes the right thing to do is not always the thing that you need to do in order to make your agenda move forward. Therefore, releasing Paul may have been the worst thing that Felix could have done in order for his own political career to continue to be advanced. Nevertheless, he agrees that Paul is innocent. But to preserve himself, which actually won't be preserved for another year or so, we're in like 56 or 57 right now, and he'll be ousted in just 2 years. But he has this prisoner that he keeps, and the friends are allowed to come, take care of him, hang out, gives him some freedom. Verse 24, several days later, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was a Jewess. He sent for Paul and listened to him as he spoke about faith in Christ. Isn't that interesting? Now he doesn't. He's like, yeah, actually I find that he is somewhat innocent. But let's bring my wife in here, and we just want to hear you talk about Christ. Why? Why would they be interested in that? Why would Drusilla in particular be interested in this? Yeah, if that's her dad, if Herod Agrippa is her dad, she might be going, I want to know about this group that my dad was killing, that people say that the reason why he died was because he was persecuting them. I want to know the ins and outs. I want to know what's happening. If her dad's Herod Agrippa, that means that she's in a long line of Herods that has quite a few interactions with this group known as the Christians, or at least with their leader. Because remember, Herod Agrippa's dad was a guy by the name of Herod the Great. At around this time of year, does that name ring a bell? Herod the Great plays what role in the gospel narrative? In Matthew chapter 2, Hannah Randolph told us yesterday, a group of magi come to Jerusalem and they ask a particular king, where is the king of the Jews? And who is that king that they ask? Herod the Great. Herod Agrippa's daddy. Her grandfather. They've got a long history of this group called the Way. One that should be very interested in figuring out the ins and outs of the group. Even hearing a prisoner known as Paul causing problems speak about his faith in Jesus Christ, in Christ Jesus. As Paul discoursed on righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. Did you hear his sermon? Talk to us about your faith in Jesus Christ, okay. We need to talk about the things you do. We need to talk about self-control, Roman rulers. And we need to talk about the judgment to come, Roman rulers. They're like, oh my gosh. That's not seeker-sensitive, ladies and gentlemen, in case you're wondering. Paul didn't get the memo that that's how you get people into the pews. Although maybe we've missed the memo as well. Felix was afraid and said, That's enough for now. You may leave. When I find it convenient, I will send for you. Oh, okay. You'll have a lot of people when you're evangelizing that'll say that same thing. And a lot of times, whenever it's most convenient for people, this is a pretty general principle, is when they're going through the most amount of suffering. When they're going through the most amount of suffering, it's a lot of times when they want to hear the message of Jesus most. Be careful what you're praying for whenever you're wanting somebody to convert. And don't be careful. Just understand what you're praying for. Because sometimes maybe the only way to get somebody to actually hear the message of Jesus is to make them go through a desert. That can be tough. But if it leads them to Jesus, that's worth it. They may not look at that, and they may not even agree with that. Nevertheless, it's a principle that's pretty true. I mean, one of the most well-attended church services in our nation in the past 50 years was the Sunday after 9/11. It just is. I had people coming out of the woodwork asking me questions after 9/11 about Jesus. Why? Because suffering is, I agree with C.S. Lewis, it is God's megaphone. He does get our attention. And he does say there's something bigger than you. There's something that is beyond you. And while I am not suggesting, this is not answering the why question, did God send the tornado to Joplin? That is impossible to answer. Absolutely impossible. Was it just the natural occurrences of the earth? Was it Satan? Was it God? I can't answer any of that. Because all of them are viable options. I can't answer any of that. Here's what I do know. The question of why is not as important as the question of who. Who is God? In the midst of a storm, who is He? He's the God that goes through the storms with us. He's the God that fights for us. He's the God that can rescue us and liberate us. He is the God that would send His own Son, even Himself, to be hanging on a tree so that we would have an opportunity to live with Him. That's our God. And therefore, that's the question, that's the answer God gave Job. Job says, why is this happening? What have I done? Why? What? Why? What? And God says, your questions are dumb. Because if you understood the question of who, you'd realize the question of why falls to the wayside. So he looks at Job and he says, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Who am I? Have you seen the heaven, you know, the storehouses laden with snow that I have up here in heaven? Have you seen those? No. Who am I? Were you the ones that called the Leviathan and the Behemoth from the crevices of the earth? No. Who am I? Question of who is more important than the question of why. Because you will never be able to find a satisfactory answer for the question of why. And frankly, the moment that you say it is the moment that you've just said something you don't know and is probably wrong. But you can say the question of who. And frankly, in the midst of a storm, that's the answer to the question that people really want to know. And you'll have people asking you the question of why. It's a natural question for us to ask. But you've always got to redirect into the question of who. Who is God? I don't know why this happened, but I can tell you who God is. He is a good God who loves you deeply. Then why would He do this? I can't answer the question why, but I can tell you the answer of who. And frankly, if you come to the terms of the question of who, you'll be okay with the why, or not knowing the answer to the why. It's like, man, whenever my wife and I had our miscarriage, a lot of times the questions that hurt me the most, or the advice that people gave me that hurt me the most, was when they were trying to give me an answer to the question of why, even though I wasn't even asking that question. You know, I was talking to one of my second dads whenever I was, we were down in my basement working. I just said, you know, it's been really rough. We're just really trying to wrestle with loss, and I just don't know how to really to process it. And he goes, well, you know what all this means, don't you? I said, no, what? It means God has something better in store for you. And I didn't, but I almost looked at him and said, please explain to me what's better than my child living. I want you to answer that for me right now. What is better than my child living? Please give me an answer to that. There is no answer to that, so shut up. That is a stupid answer to a question I'm not even asking. The why question does nothing but make more problems. You cannot answer, and every answer you do give does more destruction than help. Don't answer the question of why. Point them to who. Does that make sense? It's one of the way that they rope us into the problem of evil is they make us think we have to have an answer of the why in which all this happens. Don't know why, but I know who. Whenever I cling on to the who, the why just becomes insignificant to me. I just don't care anymore why. Do I know why the tornado happened on, you know, May 22nd, 2011? No. But I can tell you who was fighting for us in that tornado. I can tell you who the church was after that tornado. I can tell you who people were introduced to through that tornado. But I cannot tell you why. Because I don't know. Does this make sense? Make sure you're answering the right questions when you're ministering to people. Because when you're answering the wrong ones, you'll hurt them. What are we even talking about? Several days later, Drusilla tells them, not seeker sensitive, they leave. That's okay. Verse 26, at the same time, he was hoping that Paul would offer him a bribe. So he sent for him frequently and talked with him. See, not only was he trying to politically advance himself, but he also was looking for money. Why would he think that Paul would have money to give him? Why would he think that? Yeah. Maybe it's because he's got friends that he's like, man, if this guy's got friends, maybe he even looks at those as his servants. So he thinks maybe this guy's, that's possible. What else? Yeah.
He might think that since he's kind of like the ringleader, he might have a lot of money. Like, leaders of different religions, they always have all the money.
Yeah, maybe that is true. Yeah, maybe he thinks that because he is the leader of this Nazarene sect that he's able to pull together the money and he could get himself bribed out. And if people want him out enough, they'll pay whatever price it takes if he is the leader. Yes?
Since Paul is claiming to bring money to the poor, maybe he doesn't understand that that's from all the churches.
Exactly. I think that's primarily what's going on here. Paul was bringing money to the poor. He said it right in the middle of the event with Felix. My whole job was to bring money and feed tons of the poor. He says, oh, you got money for the poor. Yeah, but you've got money. Oh, you'll save yourself at some point. I'll let you sit in here and rot until you give me some of that money. You don't have to give me all of it. You can throw a couple of it to the poor, but you've got money. So hand it out. Oh, he just doesn't know Paul. Verse 27. When 2 years had passed. See how long he's waiting for his bribe? When 2 years had passed. Paul's sitting there rotting for 2 years. And Felix is going, just give me some money and you can be free. And Paul's like, I'm good. I'll just write some letters and hang out until Jesus takes me to Rome. After 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. Actually, in around 69, Felix was called to Rome by Nero. Did I say 69? 59. Sorry. 59. 69, Nero was dead, so whoops. 59, Nero calls Felix to Rome and deposes Felix because Felix was such a ruthless leader. Such a ruthless, there were so many complaints that finally Nero said, this guy's got to go. And he replaces him with Porcius Festus. But Felix wanted to grant a favor to the Jews, so he left Paul in prison. Still hoping to preserve his political career even after he is deposed from that particular region, knowing that the Jews are not just central in Judea, but also they are all over the Roman Empire, Felix says, I need to make sure I preserve that relationship in some way, shape, or form, because burning a bridge politically is never good. So he does him a favor and he says, we'll just let Paul rot. 3 days after arriving in the province, Festus went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. So Festus comes on the scene. Felix is deposed. Festus comes on the scene. He says, all right, I need to go to Jerusalem. Why? Because the main reason why Felix was deposed was because of the way he was treating the Jews. And I need to make sure I get my facts straight and try to even do them some favors so that I can make sure politically I'm furthered in this region. Yes? Yeah. Wonder how they're doing right now.
Would they have been so zealous if they starved themselves?
It's probably, we don't know exactly. My thought is that eventually they broke their fast with still the intent of killing Paul. And they would probably see that even though their fast has been broken, their calling of curses isn't broken. They still have that intact. I mean, my word, if they're willing to murder somebody to get what they want, they'd start eating just to make sure that they can continue living. You know what I mean? They're willing to break whatever rules they need to break in order to get what they need. So my guess is these guys that are willing to kill Paul and violate one of the Ten Commandments would also violate their fast in order to keep going and doing what they wanted. That'd be my guess. But we don't have any evidence of that. So, yeah. If they kept it, boy, they are skinny now. Not a good thing. Okay. 3 days after arriving in the province, Festus went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem, where the chief priests and Jewish leaders appeared before him and presented the charges against Paul. Notice the first thing the chief priests and the Jewish leaders do. Stinking Paul back in Caesarea. Got a problem with him, and here's the issue. Festus walks in, and in just 3 days, 3 days after he gets there, he's like, oh, jeez, what did Felix leave me? He did a favor to the Jews and messed me over. I still got to deal with this guy? So he goes, I got to get the facts straight. He goes before him. They start bringing all the charges. What do you think the charges are that they brought against Paul whenever Festus comes on the scene? He's a troublemaker. He causes riots. He started a new religion, and he hates ours. It's probably the same thing, which is why whenever he goes back to Paul, eventually Paul will give the same defense. They urgently requested Festus as a favor to them. Hey, you want us to be on your side? Do us this favor. Have Paul transferred to Jerusalem, for they were, you know, for what purpose? I mean, they would say, "Oh, we just want to check him out ourselves. Let's just try him here. Let's take this off your hands. Don't mess with it in your courts. Put it in our courts. It'll be fine." But they were preparing an ambush to kill him along the way. They had a goal, and they were going to accomplish it. And even 2 years in waiting, it still has not left their minds. Even after two Passovers between them, it still hasn't left their minds. Festus answered, "Paul's being held in Caesarea, and I myself am going there soon. Why don't some of your leaders come with me and press charges against the man there if he has done anything wrong?" He says, "I'll play your game, you rogue." I don't know if SNL? No. Okay. "I'll play your game." And he looks at him and he says, "You want to try, Paul? Come back with me to Caesarea and bring your guys and we'll have a trial there. Why do we need to have it here? Caesarea, you know, it's named after Caesar. I am Caesar's servant. Let's just do it there." And they're like, "Well, we've tried that before and it didn't go over well. You've got him too well guarded. We just want to kill him. I mean, try him." After spending 8 or 10 days with them, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day he convened the court and ordered that Paul be brought before him. 8 or 10 days. Why did he spend so much time in Jerusalem? Why did he spend so much time there? Think what just happened to Felix. Why would Festus spend so much time in Jerusalem? He's got to get accustomed. What else does he have to do? Yeah. This is the people that will make or break his political career. And he's got to make sure that he's got some sort of amicable relationship with them if he wants to proceed. Because they'll probably run over to Nero and get what they want again if he displeases them. So he's got to figure out a way to protect a Roman citizen and yet also not to destroy his constituency. Because if he does either one, his political career is a mess. Bad situation for Festus to walk into. Festus will actually be dead in 2 years, but he doesn't know that. So, after spending 8 or 10 days with them, well, he knows it now, just not then. Anyway, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day he convened the court and ordered that Paul be brought before him. When Paul appeared, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many serious charges against him, which they could not prove. Probably the same four. They couldn't prove it, but they still brought him before him. Then, verse 8, Paul made his defense. Now notice, we had a lengthy defense before in the trial of Felix. Paul gets one verse for his defense here in Festus. Is that because that's all Paul said? Probably not. Because it's probably the same defense because of the same accusations. And Luke's just like, "Let me just summarize this. You've already heard it. There's no reason to rehash the same thing. It's all you really need to know." Okay, it's one of those things where it's like on Pentecost, Peter probably preached longer than Acts 2. But we got the main point. Does that make sense? It's not like every time he says a word, he like, you know, that's not what Luke's doing. Luke's saying, okay, what did he say? Oh, okay, that line's good. I'll make sure that's in. That paraphrases the whole thing very well. And so in here, he can paraphrase Paul's whole defense in a verse because he's already brought it up. And that's why whenever you read this verse, it doesn't surprise you. "I've done nothing wrong against the law of the Jews or against the temple or against Caesar." That about sums it up. I'm not breaking the Pax Romana. I've not broken anything against the law of the Jews, and I didn't say anything against the temple. Come on. I was there, purified, washed in ceremonial cleansing, feeding the poor. Festus wishing to do the Jews a favor, he really wants to get the favor of the Jews. They'll make or break him. Said to Paul, "Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there on these charges?" See what he said? What is their one request? The Jews' one request to Festus is, let's bring him to Jerusalem, let us try him here. And Festus wants to do this favor for them. He's like, man, releasing him is something I can't do, but I can have the trial there, and that'll at least, I can tell them, hey, I did this for you. But Paul calls Festus on the carpet. A very dangerous and yet wise thing to do all at the same time. Paul answered, "I'm now standing before Caesar's court in Caesarea, where I ought to be tried." Why ought he be tried there? He's a Roman citizen. "I have not done anything wrong to the Jews, as you yourself know very well." It's very clear. You know I haven't done anything wrong. They can't prove anything. And you want me to go have another trial in the land of the place that's actually subject to Rome? Why? How does that make any sense for a Roman citizen? "If, however, I'm guilty of doing anything deserving death, I don't refuse to die. Do what you got to do, man. You need to kill me? Kill me. Problem is, you have nothing on me. You got no reason to kill me. So why would I go stand before trial, have the same thing done in Jerusalem that's happening right here? I'm in Caesar's court. Do we need to go to a higher court in Jerusalem? Is that what you're saying, Festus? Do you really want Nero to hear that you had to take it to a higher court in a place that was not named after him? Is that really what you want to do? But if the charges brought against me by these Jews are not true, no one has the right to hand me over to them." He looked at him and he says, no one has the right to hand me over to them, not even you. He says, oh, Festus, you're making a major mistake. You're trying to give me over to the subjects of the empire, a Roman citizen. And that's when he looks at him and he says, I appeal to Caesar. All of a sudden, Festus is like, oh, geez, shouldn't have said that. I was trying to do a favor to make myself politically saved. But now if this guy goes to Caesar and tells him what I just tried to do, that makes me in even more trouble. He goes to Caesar and he says, yeah, you know, I was in Caesar's court. They found me innocent, but he wanted to send me to Jerusalem to have the subjects of the empire try me, a Roman citizen. He did what now? Yeah, Festus, the guy you put in charge. Not sure you really want him running the business down there. So what does Festus do? After Festus had conferred with his council, smart man, oh geez, made a big mistake, what do I do, what do I do? Talk to my advisors. He declared, you have appealed to Caesar, Lex Julia, remember the third rule we talked about? To Caesar you will go. Ah, that's actually brilliant. Why? Because whenever Paul goes before Caesar and he says, Festus tried to give me over to the subjects of the emperor, even though he knew I was innocent, even though he knew this was illegal, Festus would look at him and he would say, why in the world would I have let him come to you if what he is saying is true? Why would I have let him come to Caesar? I'd have just killed him. But I sent him to you because I'm following the rules. And then at that point, you have Nero has to look at between this prisoner that's a Jew, that is a Roman citizen but is still a Jew, or Festus, the ruler of the region. And the fact that he's there actually would undercut Paul's story. Does that make sense? Politically, the only thing Festus can do to save his own hide is to send him to Caesar, even though that's the one thing he's also nervous about him doing. See the paradox? Tension? Some of you are falling asleep. It's because of my voice. I know it. If I was yelling, you'd be awake. I'm just kidding. It's probably not true. You're just boring, Shane. Verse 13. A few days later, King Agrippa and Bernice arrived at Caesarea to pay their respects to Festus. Wait a minute. I thought King Agrippa died. Oh, it's Herod Agrippa II. It's Herod Agrippa II. Herod Agrippa II stands in a long line of psychotic Herodians. The Herodians are sick. They're twisted. Herod Agrippa II is the great-grandson of Herod the Great, which means he is the son of Herod Agrippa I. The one that died in Acts chapter 12, that was his dad. Okay? So, let me write this on the board. You have Herod the Great. This will be important because you'll see how disgusting they are. Herod the Great has some kiddos. One of them is named, you know, Herod Agrippa the First. this is the guy from Acts 12 that kills James the apostle and imprisons Peter. That's who this is. His son is, they're not really unique with their names, Herod Agrippa. But we'll call him the second. Not junior, the second. Okay? Herod Agrippa has a sister. Her name was Drusilla, who was married to Felix, the guy that was deposed that Festus took the place of. That was his sister. He has another sister. Her name is Bernice. Two sisters, one's named Bernice, who's also his lover. Oh, geez, Herod. Yeah, and that's who comes. So King Agrippa and Bernice, his sister lover, I don't know how you say that, his, Lister, I don't know how you say that, they arrive in Caesarea to pay their respects to Festus. It's always smart when a new person comes to power to go there and suck up, especially before your enemies do. Because if you can get him on their side and he has power, you can leverage their power to actually accomplish your agenda and destroy your enemies. So Herod Agrippa and his sister lover, or his lover that is a sister, because it just sounds like a sister lover, like Bernice loves Drusilla, but that's not true. They come there to pay the respects to Festus to try to butter him up so they can get what they want. Since they were spending many days there, Festus discussed Paul's case with the king. He's going, yeah, I've got one for you. Got this guy. Kind of a pain in the neck. He's been around for 2.5 years now. What would you do here? He said, there's a man here whom Felix left as a prisoner, that jerk. Yeah. Your brother-in-law, that jerk. When I went to Jerusalem, the chief priests and elders of the Jews brought charges against him and asked that he be condemned. Oh, that's interesting, because the Jews didn't ask in the text for him to be condemned, did they? Did they? They just asked for a favor. What was the favor? Have him come to Jerusalem. See, but Festus knows what's going on. He knows that what they want is to kill Paul. He knows. He's not a dummy. They don't want him just to come and hang out in Jerusalem. They want him dead. I told them that it was not the Roman custom to hand over any man before he has faced his accusers and has had an opportunity to defend himself against their charges. When they came here with me, I did not delay the case, but convened the court the next day and ordered the man to be brought in. When his accusers got up to speak, they did not charge him with any of the crimes I'd expected. Instead, they had some points of dispute with him about their own religion. What is he saying? Paul was right. That's what he's saying. They were saying it was this, 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 and this. But actually, whenever the real facts came out, I realized it was points of religion. It was a dispute theologically. And what was it over? Read the next line. About a dead man named Jesus who Paul claimed to be alive. What was it over? The resurrection. Festus is not dumb. He actually knows everything that's going on. And if he really believed what he just said, then like Gallio, he should have dismissed it. I was, verse 20, I was at a loss how to investigate such matters. Why? Because I've got to get the Jews on my side and they are zealous about killing this guy. Lost about the matter, so I asked if he would be willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial before there on these charges. When Paul made his appeal to be held over for the emperor's decision, I ordered him held until I could send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, "Yeah, I'd like to hear this man myself." He replied, "Tomorrow you will hear him." Hold on a second. Let me look at something. Yeah, we're going to stop there because we're officially caught up. All right, we will hear the trial before Agrippa tomorrow, which will posture us to awesomely have our test on Friday.